Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Everyone, and welcome to another edition of Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. I would like to remind everybody before I bring everyone on that Main Street Universe is in fact a network of, I think it's seven shows now. I'm losing track. It's tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Main Street Universe, the flagship show, the one that started it all, myself and Kevin Baird, the co-founder, co-creator of Main Street Universe with me. Now, of course, our hostess, welcome Denise.
Hello, everybody.
And our new host, not new host, I'm sorry, the one that's, whose phone is being turned on right now, Mr. Brett Hillman, and welcome, Brett.
Glad to be here.
Or a brief hiatus, a vacation. We let him get vacation time here at Main Street Universe.
Life has to be next then.
That's right.
I was going to say, it's been pretty, I've been here for a new host, I've been here for pretty close to 3 years now, haven't I? 2-3 years.
That's right, but then just think of the singer from AC/DC, the second guy, you know, because they had two singers. They started off with the one guy, then they got the Bon Scott, whatever his name is, and he's been with the band for 30 years, and he's like, I've been with the band for 35, 40 years, and they still call me the new guy, because I started with, the guy that did Dirty Deeds was another singer. Anyway,
A
little rock and roll history for you.
Well, I will take being called the Velvet Lion over Dancing Queen.
That's right. So, anyway, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the flagship show, the one that started all Main Street Universe. Thursdays at 1 p.m., our new hostess, Queen Mother Imaku, with her show Uatua. She focuses on Kemetic Egyptian-African tradition, and she is a high priestess of that tradition. It's a great show, very informative. She comes at an angle that even a lot of studied pagans aren't, all of them, so familiar with the sort of African-Egyptian connection. So check it out, Kemet. 1 p.m. in the afternoon, Eastern Time, our only daytime show now. Then, of course, on Friday evenings at midnight, we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with your host, Jesse Ann Nichols. George, Jesse is the author of two books, Activating Compassion, The Companion Workbook. She's working on two more, and we'll discuss those when she gets it out. That's Fridays at midnight. She's had lots of great guests. Some involving charities for animals, some involving different metaphysical practitioners, and some involving some great musicians. Steve Halpern, she had a great piano player on, Peter Kater, not too long ago, people that made the New Age charts. And then Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Spiritual Insight with your host, Darren Bouquer, calling all the way from the magical city of New Orleans. So that's 7 p.m. Darren is a reader at the world-famous Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in New Orleans. So check it out. And then Monday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time is Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey with your host, Kevin Baird. Kevin is an artist, and he's well creator of a divination deck, a tool, a series of cards that he himself created. There's 111 in the deck called the Horizon Oracle. Check out Kevin at www.templeofgaia.com. And then on Tuesday evenings, welcome our new hostess, who I'm very proud to have on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, Susan Weed, with her show Green Magic and Green Medicine. That's right, the herbalist, expert, naturalist Susan Weed is now a host on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And we did our first show last evening about coffee, and she's doing a series on power plants. Basically, there's plants that have powerful effects on us in many, many different ways. And tonight, our guest is an author and a high priestess, and I think I see her in the queue now. And I'm going to welcome to Main Street Universe, Miss Amber Kay. Welcome, Amber.
Hello, and merry meet.
Merry meet.
Merry meet to you as well. And Amber, I think what we'll do, first of all, how was your evening?
Yes, how was your evening?
It's becoming rapidly more organized. I managed to make connection with you, so I'm very pleased about that.
That's right, and so are we. But it's been that kind of week. It truly has. At my day job, it's been just, you know, I just wanted to pack up my tools and throw them in the back of the van and leave. So I'm an electrician during the day, by the way, in case you're curious. And as well as a musician. And so it's been a hectic 2 weeks for me, actually. And what I want to do, I guess, to start right off, in the beginning, and you are an author. You're also a Wiccan high priestess, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go back to your beginnings, your origins, and I read in your bio, it said, your father was Roman Catholic and your mother was Episcopalian. And it said that you would church swap. What was that experience like? And how do you think that shaped your path?
Well, it was different. At the time, of course, I didn't know it was different. It was just the way that I grew up, attending Roman Catholic Mass 1 week and then Episcopalian services the next week and back and forth and back and forth. And I think of the two, I preferred the Episcopalian services because I could sleep more easily. It was easier to nap through those. Whereas in the Roman Catholic services, which were Latin at the time, we got to listen to incomprehensible foreign languages and then a sermon from the local priest who is a member of the John Birch Society and he would explain very vehemently every Sunday about how the left-wing conspiracies were taking over the country. So it was an interesting sort of introduction to religion, and I think my parents had the good sense to realize early on that neither one was going to take, because all my siblings got confirmed in one or the other, and they just didn't even try with me. So I escaped relatively unscathed.
I remember we had Oberon Zell Ravenheart on the show a while back. If you're familiar with him, I remember him mentioning in an article that he used to go out. His parents were so conservative, he used to go outside in the woods and ask for the UFOs to come take him back home. So it sounds like it didn't hit you quite as harsh.
No, but I would have loved the woods alternative. You know, if there had been a woods nearby to escape to, I certainly would have been there.
Absolutely. And Another step in your evolution is near and dear to my heart, and I saw this in your bio, is that you spent some time with Unitarian Universalist congregations as well. Is this when you first started studying or discovering pagan paths, maybe through their RE program, or was it after, or how did that progression work?
No, that's exactly what it is. The Unitarians gave me the vehicle to discover my long-term genuine spiritual path, and I'll always be grateful to the Unitarian Church for that. I spent 12 years among Unitarians, enjoyed them thoroughly. The overriding ethic or culture of the Unitarian Church is let us agree to disagree and not talk about it unless we can do so in a calm and intellectual manner. And that was very nice. I really enjoyed that. But I wound up as the director of religious education for a large Unitarian church, First Unitarian in Chicago. And while I was heading the religious education program, I was researching ancient religions for one of the junior high classes. And lo and behold, here were these ancient religions that had goddesses as well as gods, that actually thought that nature was powerful and sacred, that occasionally practiced magic or at least more fascinating ritual practices than I had ever encountered. And, of course, the conclusion I came to after learning about several ancient religions was, these are wonderful. I wish some of them were still around. And it wasn't long after that that I found out that, in fact, some of them were still around, heavily closeted at the time. But all it took was visiting one pagan festival, and I was captured at that point. The Unitarians appealed a great deal to my mind, but pagans captured my heart as well. So from then on, there was no turning back.
And that is so often case, the story, because one tie-in to that is I live with two Unitarian ministers. I rent an apartment from my brother and his wife, and I do a lot of stuff, and I love gathering with those people. It is more of the mind and of the intellect, which is okay, because also you get really good information there, too. It's not always just something somebody picked up off a website. You know, it's very intellectual, as you said. So I've done rituals with them. And my brother's pagan group is actually pretty good, and I think his RE person was a pagan woman for a while as well. So the Unitarians are very open to it. You know, when they let the pagans teach the kids, that shows that they're very open-minded in that.
Yes, many, many blessings upon the Unitarians.
Yes. And now, Janice.
Hi, Amber. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. One Amber to another one. So, yes. Well, it's an honor to interview you today and to share your wealth with True Magic, your newest book, How to Become a Witch, Coven Craft, and the other books that you have. So I want to start with, I have the old version of True Magic. I know you have one that you just brought out in 2005, I believe. But when I got mine, it was a long time ago. Because I'm almost up to my 20th year of magic, believe it or not. And the first free books that I received was True Magic, Bookland's Blue Book, and the Holy Book of Women's Mysteries. And I still have True Magic somewhere in the house and the Holy Book of Women's Mysteries. And I got to actually meet you at Pagan Spirit this year or this summer, and I was really impressed with the Dark Goddess classes. So I'm going to be asking some questions about that a little bit later. But what I want to start off with is how True Magic relates to your newest book, which is How to Become a Witch, that you wrote with your partner, Asriel. Did I say that right? Asriel Aaron Kay. So
yes.
Can you tell me that what is similar to your True Magic book and what is different in those two books?
Sure. a little history of the True Magic book. When I was training with Temple of the Pagan Way more than 30 years ago, the only books out on magic were a few spell books of recipes and Sibylline, and then, of course, several books on ceremonial magic, the Golden Dawn and all that sort of thing. And none of those books that were available at that time really delved into the mechanics of magic and how it works and how to create your own magic with individually designed rituals and spells. There was nothing like that out there. So I wrote this little 30-page booklet that I put together on my kitchen table, literally, explaining what I understood in my first years of training as being basically how magic works. And it wasn't long after that that Llewellyn Publications got in touch with me and said, would you like to expand this? And so I did, and that turned into the little green book that you have at home.
Yes.
Which took off like a rocket. It sold more than 200,000 copies in the first few years, which for our genre is a lot.
That's a lot of books. And you know,
and
you
then,
also a lot of people that are nostalgic, if I can say that right. Because when I came back from PSG and I was talking to Daniel and I was like, I got Air Burquet, and then like, and he was very excited because he's like, that's a True Magic lady, right? I was like, yes, it's a True Magic lady. And I know with the research that I was doing for the books, because you have quite a bit of books here, actually. Do you feel that people are becoming nostalgic, so to speak, over the first book? Because I know you have the original copy, and now you have the one that's from 2005, which is a 15th anniversary copy and like, updated for with more information.
Yes, I certainly have run across the nostalgia thing, because the little green book was short and clear and straightforward, and a lot of people liked that. They liked that they could sit down and read it in very little time, and it was comprehensible. It wasn't filled with arcane terminology or, you know, Golden Dawn material.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was, when the 15th anniversary rolled around, Llewellyn contacted me and said, we'd like to reissue True Magic with a brand new cover.
Okay.
And I thought, a new cover? That's all? A new cover? Because in 15 years, I would like to believe that I learned something from practicing magic constantly. And so I said, no, we're not going to reissue it with a new cover. We're going to reissue it with a complete update. And so I added 6 more chapters and 100 exercises that people could do to strengthen their magical skills. And that's what's out there now. That's the current thing. And because it is longer and somewhat more complex and a little more advanced, I'm not sure if it will be as popular as the original Little Green Book was, which was so simple and so easy in many ways. But I could not in good conscience have them put out the same thing after 15 years of growth and change. I wanted to share that. And I'm guessing that in another 15 years I'll have more information and understand magic better and will want to do it all over again. At least I hope so.
Yes,
but
you
had asked, what's the relationship between True Magic and the newest book, How to Become a Witch?
Correct.
Well, part of the reason that How to Become a Witch happened was people kept coming to me over the years and saying, you know, True Magic is the best book on Wicca I ever read. I really enjoyed it, et cetera, et cetera. And while that was very flattering and complimentary, the problem was that True Magic is not about Wicca. It's about magic.
Okay.
It's about the basics of magic from a Wiccan standpoint, but it falls very far short of being a guide to Wicca, which is a spiritual path as well as a magical one. So I had all these people thanking me for something I hadn't written, which was a primer on Wicca. So Azrael and I received a letter from Llewellyn a few years ago, and they wanted to continue their how-to series, a whole bunch of books on how to do different aspects of magic and paganism. And among this vast list of titles that they would like to publish was How to Become a Witch. It was just a title, and they were seeking authors to write it. And Azrael and I conversed for a few minutes and decided, you know, if we don't snap that title up and do that for Llewellyn, somebody will snap up that title, and they will write the same book that's been written 20 times already, which is How to Cast a Circle, How to Make a Robe, and What Are the Eight Sabbaths, which
right.
I'm afraid has been done to death.
It has
so
been
we thought,
done.
Yeah. So we thought if we grab that title, which is not exactly an elegant title, but I guess it's straightforward and clear. If we grab the title, we can talk about what it means to live as a witch, what that spiritual practice does in your daily life, and how it transforms your life, which we think is a little more important and gets shortchanged in so many of the beginner books.
Right.
So that's why we did it.
So Brett wants to come in.
I was actually going to ask something based on True Magic. Your new book, you have this elemental star chart, which is a kind of a questionnaire and seeing where you are balanced based on elements in the tree of life. I am fascinated by this chart. I have not had a chance to put it into practice yet, but where did you come up with that wonderful idea?
Well, it's kind of been staring us all in the face for a very long time now. I mean, the pentagram has been a revered symbol for thousands of years, and certainly pretty much every witch on the face of the planet thinks of it in part as representing the four elements and spirit. And we tell one another that part of being a witch is to seek a balance of the elements in our lives, to have access to earth, air, fire, water, and spirit, the different energies those represent at any given time. And so the question becomes, how do you know when you're balanced? How do you know when you have equal access to all of the elements in the way you live and the way you think and behave? And I thought, well, maybe we just write up one of those little questionnaires, not too terribly different from things you find in Cosmopolitan magazine or whatever, except instead of, you know, are you sexy enough for your man, or those kind of quizzes, we would apply it to a somewhat more serious topic and say, are you balanced among the elements? And the tool is met with a whole lot of favor. People really like taking little quizzes that illuminate their inner lives. I will say that it is not a perfect tool, because to be perfect, it needs to be individualized for every person that takes the quizzes and creates their own personal elemental star. What I did was take 10 questions in each of the 5 points of the star, and 10 questions that I thought for myself would indicate whether or not I was in touch with and had access to my fire energy, and the same with the others. But those questions were originally designed for myself, and I tried to make them as broad as I could to apply to others. But to be a perfect elemental star exercise, people should take that and they should tweak it so that whatever means air or fire or water to them is incorporated into it. There is no one-size-fits-all unless we desire to have a uniform spirituality, which I don't think we do.
Agreed. And like I said, it was just an amazing thing. True Magic has a place in my heart as well, because the little version was the first book I ever read myself for anything magical, and I just picked up a copy of your newer one. Actually, we met 2 years ago at Convocation, my first Convocation, and I picked up the new book while we were there, and I gone on a long spiritual journey since then, and I've just kind of remembered the book not too long ago, and the chart just keeps coming back into my mind, and I really want to use it. So I wanted to ask a question about that.
I hope you do. And for the readers, or the listeners, I should say, the people who are listening and wondering what the heck we're talking about, this is an exercise where you answer 50 questions, and you answer them on a scale of 1 to 10. An example being perhaps, how aware of you are you of your emotional state at any given time? That would be a sample under the water point of the pentagram. Anyway, you answer these 50 questions on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you use your answers, or the numbers of your answers, to create a five-pointed star. And the five-pointed star invariably is not fully balanced. It has little tiny pokey points, and it has large points, and sometimes it even has dimples where there should be a point of the star. But it shows you in quick graphic form what elements you're strong in and what elements you are not so strong in. And it's kind of a cool visual aid, and its intent is that then you will go back and do some additional personal work on the areas where you are weak until ideally you arrive at the point where all five points are balanced in your life and you have complete access to all of those energies.
And you mentioned that. What I really like about that exercise is another host on our network, Queen Mother Imaku, she also mentioned being highly influenced by true magic. Though she doesn't call herself Wicca, she's into African Kemetic tradition. But that was one of her starts into the metaphysical, magical world was, just as she was mentioning it to me on a telephone conversation, that's when Janice contacted me and said, hey, I got Amber Kay to come on the show. So, it's, you've had an effect on quite a few people on this network, actually, which must be an interesting experience to run into people, that you've impacted with your work.
It's very gratifying when people come up to you at a festival or an event and say, hey, I read your book and it really helped me. That is such an honor and a responsibility to be influencing people, lots of people out there that I've never even met. And I think it means that someone who writes, especially in areas of spirituality, has a huge responsibility to take care with what they say and how they say it, so that at the very least, what they're sharing does no harm, and ideally, so that it empowers people to find and create their own spiritual path and continue the great work, which is the goal of all magic anyway, or I should say, all theurgical magic.
And what I like about that is the conversation Queen Mother and I were having was about working on the shadow self, and that exercise kind of serves that. It's like, okay, working on your weaknesses, not just always focusing on the happy stuff you're good at, but working on those things that need the work, those elements that need the work. Janice?
So, yes, I got to get the second, the 15th anniversary book and do that test myself, actually. But since I do have four of your books and I have read at least two of them from top to bottom or from beginning to end, what I see in your books is an evolution, starting with the little green book, as we're calling it tonight, the True Magic, the Beginner's Guide, up until Covencraft, which I really adore. Covencraft, because it definitely gives you the guidelines of creating your own coven, but it also gives you what you can think about. If you're not really sure if this particular coven is good for you, you can look at the guidelines of Covencraft and match it with a coven that's already assisted. And the latest book, being an evolution of all four books in my head, or five books, you have more than four, but it appeals to me as in maybe somebody who's passed Wicca 101 who wants to explore more. And they get that from, yes? Yes, with how to become a witch, because the chapters I enjoyed the most is chapter 6, 7, 12, and 13, where 12 and 13 basically also tell you how to start your own coven and what you look for in a coven, where 6 and 7 is more the preparation of being a magical person, of living this. So can you elaborate a little bit of these chapters that I speak of? Because it feels to me like the soul of your individual practice is kind of based on these four chapters.
Well, let's see.
Or did I do the question way too long?
Sure, it's a broad question. Let me try to narrow it down a little bit. I'm also looking in a copy in front of me.
Okay.
So, yeah, chapter 6 is spiraling into the center, your daily practice. And it's been in my mind for very many years that the problem with some of the mainstream religions is it has become an occasional practice with very cut-and-dried rules. If you go to services once a week and follow a few commandments, then, hey, you're good. And I've always thought that was kind of a pitiful approach to one's spirituality. One's spirituality should be constant change and growth and evolution towards something glorious. It shouldn't be another chore that we put on the list. And the chapter you were referring to, the first one, is about creating a daily practice that is very individual and meaningful and powerful for you and you alone. I think it would be a horrible mistake to prescribe a daily practice and say, every morning you should get up and recite this affirmation and draw one tarot card and run the middle pillar exercise, because we are not all cut from the same cloth. We are unique individuals. And what any one of us needs for spiritual practice at any given time is going to be unique. So, you know, for some people, a tarot as part of their daily practice makes perfect sense. For other people, a walk in nature and greeting and connecting energetically with different life forms is a powerful spiritual practice. For other people, aspecting a goddess or a god form might be a daily practice. And for other people, it involves music, you know, jamming with your favorite instrument, or, you know, creating a shamanic song spontaneously out of your heart.
Uh-huh.
It's just going to be so different for every person, and there is no way to prescribe a practice. So the whole point of that particular chapter is to get people thinking about the myriad different things that they could do as part of their practice. And that practice will change, it will evolve, it will not be the same this month as it may be next year, but it should be like that. It should be evolving and changing, and it should be particular to you and your life and what you need to grow.
Correct. Because even the whole scope of witchcraft, if you want to put it that way, I know when I started, it was just basically you were either Celtic or Greek or Egyptian or Roman. And now we have the rebirth of the Africa diaspora, which I don't consider to be craft at all, but there are people that do. Then you have the Nordic ones with the Esotrude, and then you have even the ones that do like the cooking magic or the witch magic, and like you said, people that do tarot cards every day, which I don't do, or people that go into nature or meditate, do yoga. It's just really a broad general area that, you know, anything could be called witchcraft. And in some ways it is. But I know also that people are going to places like PSG or Sacred Space that we have here at Ecumenicon, and they're looking to deepen their practice. So it becomes more of an individual focus as as different than the group mind focus, which I think your book illustrates how to become a witch. It's the different practices and the different exercises you can do to achieve that.
Yes, group mind is all very well when you're in a circle working magic and when you have a common goal. Then you want a group mind. You want people who are of a like mind when you're doing that. But in terms of our spiritual practice and our thinking and our relationship to divinity, the group practice, I think, is far less important than individual discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like it very much if we wound up with every single pagan creating their own tradition unique to that person. And then we could all share our traditions and draw from one another and enrich all of our separate unique paths.
Mm-hmm. And Brett, are you're there?
I'm here. Hello?
Yes, Brett. You wanted to ask her about Candlemass.
Yes. I found that book very interesting because, well, you find a lot of books. You mentioned before that the Sabbath, the way to make a robe, that's all been done to death. But what you've done is taken one specific holiday and you've written an entire book on it and put it into a much deeper context than any 101 starting book can really do. I do want to start, of course, with Bridget, who is kind of my girl in a sense, because I deal with her in both goddess and saint aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And what made you decide to pick that particular holiday? And just going from there, and I want to say, you know, you were mentioning the title chapter of the witch book, and that song from Convocation went into my head, spiraling into the center, just started going through my head at nauseam again, which it tends to do.
Yeah.
Great chapter, actually, Brett.
Okay, so let me talk about Candlemass for a moment, which is our title for the book about that holiday. And we've had a couple of folks critique the title because it's not Imolg or Oimelk, the Celtic words for the holiday. And the fact is that we hope to draw some non-pagans to read the book, and if we had named it Imolg or Oimelk, nobody who wasn't already semi-trained would ever have picked up the book. Candlemas gives us a shot at reaching some people who are maybe on the edges of paganism. So it's Candlemas Feast of Flames, and many other names for the holiday are around the outside of the cover. And when Llewellyn approached us to write one of the books in their Sabbath series, we instantly jumped on that one because that's been my favorite Sabbath forever. And I've been in love with Bridget forever and just could not miss that opportunity. And, of course, the book focuses more on Bridget than any other aspect of the holiday because she is a truly incredible goddess. She was incredible when she was the goddess of sovereignty among the Celts, as well as water and fire and healing and smithcraft and inspiration and poetry and the martial arts and so many other things. But then she got this additional dimension because when the early Christian church how shall I say this? Some people say that they borrowed a Celtic goddess and turned her into a saint. And that may be the case. We will never know for sure, but it might have been a human being who was simply named after the goddess and who was, in fact, one of the founders of the Irish church. In either case, the early Christians did us a great favor by bringing Saint Bridget to people's attention because so often gods and goddesses tend to feel distant from us. They are so powerful and encompassing and amazing and mysterious that it's hard to create a relationship sometimes with deity. And I think the more transcendent and all-powerful the deity is, the more difficult it is to relate to them in any kind of human terms. But here we have this Celtic goddess who now is also a Christian saint. And as a Christian saint, she milked cows and she churned butter and she stole stuff from her father and, you know, she hung out with the farm animals and did all this kind of normal human stuff before she got around to founding abbeys and things like that. And that makes her so much easier to relate to on a human scale. So I really think a favor was done when St. Bridget was either discovered or created or recorded, however she came about, because suddenly this sublime and wonderful goddess is light years closer to human experience. And I have found her so accessible and so warm and so easy to talk to and relate to. You know, I could blather on forever about how great Bridget is. But go read the book, and if you don't know Bridget, because she is truly wonderful.
I just want to inject to Brett and then back to Janice. So I just wanted to have a quick injection here, because recently I did a YouTube video of an Irish traditional song, Bread is the Rose, and it mentions the river Boyne, actually, and it's the goddess of that river was Boyne. Now, some neo-pagans say that this was some precursor to being Bridget's mama, but some people say not. I was curious what your opinion is that, if you're familiar with Boyne. She challenged the well of wisdom, circled around it. It overflowed in fury and came down and formed the river Boyne.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that story, and it's a fascinating story. You know, I think you can make a very good case for Boyne as being a primal goddess who may have been Mother Bridget. There's so much that was unrecorded in those times. The Celts did not leave us written recordings. We had to rely on later Christian monks to get any kind of sense of Celtic mythology and Celtic history. And so there's a lot that's going to be sort of half lost in the mist of time. The goddess Danu is another one who is obviously powerful and all-encompassing in terms of rivers and waters and so many other things. And yet we have very little information on Danu's backstory or history or evolution or mythology. And much is true of Boyne. So was she Bridget's mother? Very possibly. I think the best way to find out is to sit down and meditate and talk to Bridget and ask her for some of her family history. Now, whether you'll get the same answers as anyone else who does the same thing, I can't say, but the answer will be meaningful to you, and that's good enough. You know, there's no absolute factual truth when you explore mythology. It's all spiritual truths that are valuable when they apply to our own lives and uplift and empower us.
Brett, did you have another question about Candlemas, Brett?
I was going to say I could do the same thing about blabbering about Bridget all day. In fact, it was talking to my co-host Daniel here. He was having some problems, and I mentioned Bridget a few times, that she kind of sneakily kind of made it clear that she was working with me in a real way. It was like, oh, I get it now. And it's that whole thing that spirit really is very much all-encompassing, as opposed to just one specific dogmatic view. Mm-hmm. And I would say even among any spirituality, including Christianity, Islam, it's all-encompassing and can't be contained in quick rote morning, you do the same thing every morning and you're good to go. It just doesn't work. But going back to Candlemas real fast, I wanted to just ask you, you chose that holiday because it was really important to you, and I can see why. Do you think, it's kind of an interesting question because of the fact in the Southern Hemisphere, a lot of times you see a lot of pagan groups just switch the holidays around. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that actually fits for some of these holidays, for example, Imbolc or the harvest ones? Do you think that maybe there's some other holidays they should explore, or do you think that it fits?
Oh, you know, in a perfect world, every holiday would evolve in response to the local environment, to the weather patterns and the land masses and the bodies of water in a certain region, and according to the growing season in that region and the winters or monsoons or whatever great changes they have. I like the Celtic holidays. I think they work well for someone who's descended from Europeans in the Northern Hemisphere, but I would not presume to prescribe for, say, someone in Australia what holidays they should follow or when they should be celebrated. I really think that adapting them to fit the land and the environment and the climatic conditions where they are makes a lot of sense. And if you can retain traditional elements that have meaning to your ancestors, that's great. And if those elements no longer make sense or work with the land that you're living in, then change them. That's my thought.
I'll be honest with you, I have no idea why that question came to mind just then, but it did. And I want to say thank you for answering it very clearly.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
All right, I'm back again. On February 2nd, I celebrate Oya because she's more closer to my type than Bridget. Nothing wrong with Bridget, though, but I just prefer Oya. Now I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Dark Goddess, because that was the class that you had in PSG that I was very excited about, even though we had a little disagreement about Isis, you know, Dark Isis as opposed to just Isis herself. But I remember that you featured eight goddesses for that particular class, and they were Hecate, whose feast day was yesterday, or so I've been told by my Italian friends, Kali Ma, Morgan, Iris, Ereshkigal,
Sekhmet.
Ereshkigal. Sekhmet, which is another personal favorite. Telekote, Tiamat, and Kaliash. I hope I didn't leave those names too badly. And I took notes on it, on all of them, because like I said, Sekhmet is one of my personal favorites, even though she didn't come to me in the meditation. It was a tie between Eris with the golden apple and Tiamat. Both of them had came to me. And I think at the particular time, Tiamat was a little closer because my mother had died the month before I had came to PSG. And there is a sacred marriage, sacred motherhood aspect of her. So one of my questions is for you to explain the importance of the Dark Goddess and why we need to establish a relationship with her.
Absolutely. Let me start by saying that many of the mainstream religions today divide the universe into powers of good and powers of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And although there's nothing wrong with recognizing polarities in our reality, there are some problems when you divide the universe that way and assign half of everything to the evil side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Christian church has run into that problem with the devil or Satan or whoever you want to call him. Paganism, most pagan spiritual paths don't do that. For most pagans, there is no god or goddess of evil to which you assign rulership of half the universe. But we still have to account for and deal with those events in our lives that are terribly difficult and painful and sometimes damaging We have to account for illness, for pain, for grief, for fear, for anger, for death. All of those things are real. All of those things are part of the world. And it doesn't work very well just to shuffle them off and say, oh, that's the devil's stuff. The devil made me do it. The devil did this to me, whatever. For one thing, it allows us to forfeit responsibility for dark or difficult events in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the pagan approach better, which is to say that there are deities, there are gods and goddesses who have some rulership or influence over death and pain and anger and so forth. But they are not necessarily evil in any way. That every single dark goddess, however you define that term, also has a side which is either enlightening or compassionate or empowering or something very positive and valuable to us. So a goddess of death, for example, also gives us the hope of reincarnation and returning to life as the cycle of our lives turns. A goddess of pain also gives us the means to face and heal that pain. A goddess who works with anger also gives us a way to turn that anger into empowerment and to use that anger for a just cause. So it's really, really important to find goddesses and gods that deal with those aspects of human life which are incredibly difficult for us, culminating, of course, with the experience of death, and to come to an understanding and to allow them to guide us and to mentor us in how we respond to these terrible situations that we encounter. And no one knows better than a goddess like Kali or Sekhmet or any of these others. No one knows better than they how to deal with the darkness and the pain and the fear and so on. And if we trust them and face those issues and ask their guidance and hold their hand as we confront the issues and walk that path through the darkness, they will get us safe to the other side. But if we simply turn away and in denial and say, it's all the devil, and ouch, it hurts, I don't want to face it, I don't want to deal with it, then we're pretty well doomed.
Yes.
So any kind of spiritual growth or strength requires that we face these things, and we need the dark goddesses as companions and guides in that.
I agree.
And last night, there was a person last night that I was debating with very mildly that, and I said, it was actually on Facebook, but whatever. There it is. And I said, I didn't want to get into a long debate because it was just over a silly picture I posted of myself. And she said something about evil. And I said, I don't necessarily believe in evil. I believe in varying degrees of, you know, bad or good behavior. And, of course, some comment about evil, it lives in the hearts of every man, woman, and child, I think was the actual comment. I also sensed some intoxication in the statement because she was horribly misspelling everything. Nice person, actually, but it's just that idea of it just puts things into categories instead of something that can be worked on. It just puts things into an absolute instead of, well, what about, is it evil to face a fear? Is it evil when a lion kills a deer? No, it might look vicious, but it's not evil. You know, there are things that we need to work on, and I agree that the dark goddesses give us those things. Like you said, walking through death for the hope of new life. Facing fears is another one. That's why they can be good to meditate on in a dark room. You know, facing Kali Ma in a dark room is a little unnerving. But but anyway, go ahead, Janice.
So, and I do have the charge of the dark goddess from the class, if you want me to read that, or if you want us to read that. But I thought it was a very influential class, because like I said, my mother had suddenly passed away, and I thought that the dark goddess class would have been very good for me to deal with that, because at the time I was still mentally and physically dealing with that separation.
Of course.
Because it was very unexpected when it had happened.
Yes, it's times like that that you really need the Dark Goddess, because she can make sense out of it and find the hope within the pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to read the Charge of the Dark Goddess, I'd be happy to share that with people and hope it proves valuable to them.
Okay. The Charge of the Dark Goddess. Hear the words of the Dark One, she whose name is rarely whispered but echoes in the marrow of your bones, she who has called Erishka, Samil, Kali, Medusa, Morgan, Lilith, the norms, the face. I am she who balances the scale of the other side of love and light. You may think my justice is harsh and my gifts terrible, because I offer you cold and darkness, pain and disease, solitude and the end of the world that you have known. I offer, and you may not refuse, for if I obey a while in the springtime among the flowers, it is not to me whose blossoms wither and night falls. You will surely see my face. Then you will know that I am the key to the seven gates that go down to the underworld. I am the bitter wine and the hemlock, which brings Circus from worldly cares. I am the dark passage and the earth's womb at the end of it. Face me. I am the one who waits at the crossroads at midnight. I am she who gazes upon the tapestry of your dreams and slashes the thread of life. I am the raven who tears up the flesh of the battle slain. I am the burrowing one who seeks the buried corpse in the darkmost earth. I am the sin eater who destroys your evil deeds and your unendurable guilt. I am destroyer who tramples worlds. Come to me and know that you need me. I am the one who heals when the healers have abandoned hope. I am the one who holds you close where no one can hurt you again, and the antechamber of the new birthing. I am the night which gives day meaning, the darkness which makes might endurable, the fellow winter which prepares the fertile summer. I am she who cleanses all, heals all, renews all, and without me would be such emptiness, the same barren sameness, worse than what you have dreamed. For this I shelter you, from this I protect you, from this I bear you away on sable wings. I am the shadow at the brightest dawn and the silence of the deepest night, the clouds that cover the moon's face and the glowing eyes in the blackness, and the calling of the owl and the howling of the wolves as they hunt. The beings say he scream and the weeping of those left behind. I call upon your soul to descend and come unto me, for I am the spirit of stillness that brings death to the universe. For behold, I have been with you at every ending, and I am which is attained at the end of the desire. That's very powerful.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope I did it well.
Yeah, it's not an easy piece to read, and you did great. Thank you. If anyone wants a copy of that, then... I believe Azure Green has them available, and a lot of metaphysical stores sell little parchment posters with that on it. So, or somebody could email me, and I could send them the text also. So that's an option.
Which reminds me, Amber Kay, any plugs that you might want to do as we're kind of winding down here?
Oh. I will just mention that through a weird group of circumstances, Azrael and I are working on no less than 8 different books right now, which is not our usual style. Usually we do one at a time, but some strange things happen, and we've actually got 8 different books in the works. So for those people out there who enjoy our writing and have found it valuable, keep your eyes open, and there will be more, and certainly as things come to fruition, we will mention it on our website, which is amber-k.com. And that's a good place to sort of keep track of what Azrael and I are up to these days. They might also want to visit the Ardentane website, which is our school based in New Mexico. And that's A-R-D-A-N-T-A-N-E. It's anglicized Gaelic. It means the light of the fire. And if you go to ardentane.org, you'll find the school's website there. And we would love to see some of your listeners visit us in New Mexico.
Well, I'm planning to come next year.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And I did want to mention that for those listening now or in the magical time machine that is the archive listen, when you click and listen, her link for amberk.com is attached to our show page, what I call the marquee page, the place where they go and physically listen to the show online at Blog Talk Radio. So it is attached. There is a link there. Maybe I'll, after the fact, put the Ardentane. Because a lot of times we get a lot of archive listens. Sometimes it's just, you know, word gets out, people start sending things out, and all of a sudden you look back and you go, oh, wow, a lot of people listened after the fact. So
great.
That happens often with this, you know, new media radio, I guess you can say. And I also, if you are comfortable, we won't do this on the air, but I just wanted to make it announcement as far as we would like to give you a few gifts, and maybe if you contact Janice privately, or if Janice contacts you privately, we'll send you a Main Street Universe T-shirt and maybe some magnets and pens and things of that nature, maybe a bumper sticker. So if you are interested in some free Main Street Universe stuff that we are giving away, we'll give you a T-shirt and some magnets. Instead of business cards, I usually use magnets because I figure people keep them more likely to keep them. And even if they have no interest in what the thing is, they're more likely to keep and put something on the refrigerator, I think, than to keep a business card.
Sure. Well, that's very generous. I thank you for that, and I will wear my Main Street Universe T-shirt, and when people ask me what's that all about, then I can direct them to the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've had a lot of progress ourselves, but it's been an interesting, I guess, almost 2 years. This Halloween is 2 years. This Halloween is 2 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we've had some amazing guests, yourself included, Oberon Zell, Selena Fox, Chris Penzack,
Raven
Grimasi. We have a great new hostess, Susan Weed, the great herbalist. So things are going very well here. Now, Brett, are you still there?
Okay. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We're kind of winding down now, folks. I just want to see if you had any last questions for Amber Kay.
I was going to say, you are rating 8 books. I think, you know, that in itself is a feat. I was going to say, are you planning any trips in the future? But 8 books might hold you down.
Well, we do travel a lot. We just got back from Salem, Massachusetts, and this fall we'll be going to a Florida pagan gathering. So actually we spend a lot of plane time and driving time writing our books. Because we do travel so much. So maybe I'll see some of your listeners in Florida this fall.
Possibly.
Possibly.
And I have one last question, and then I think we've got to wrap up here. And you're a Wiccan High Priestess. Do you have personal students between all of your work and writing books and traveling around and doing all that? Do you have personal students? And I'm curious if you still do. Do you notice any difference between, say, students of the past and students of now?
I have very few what you would call personal students. On rare occasions, I will tutor somebody individually, but most of that work, most of my teaching is done through Ardentane programs at our school in New Mexico or through my home coven, which is Our Lady of the Woods, also based in New Mexico. So that's where I do most of my one-on-one teaching or small group teaching. As to whether I've noticed any difference in students today or say 35 years ago when I got into this. I think there is more freedom to practice, more creativity, more spontaneity. It was a very closed, small universe 35 years ago, and people, I think, felt spiritually cramped by the fact that we were a very misunderstood minority and could not practice openly. My first 2 or 3 years in the craft, I never did an outdoor ritual.
Mm.
We met in a basement in secret and did not dare to do an outdoor ritual. So that gives you an idea how much things have changed. And I think the newer generations of witches and pagans have drunk deeply of that heady wine of freedom. And as a result, many of them are so courageous and creative. It's quite wonderful.
Now, do you think that the old way? I'm not taking a position here. I'm just asking if, as someone that is, you know, from that time when it was really. I'm 42. I'm not getting into me too much, but I remember things being a bit different in the 70s, but still like progressing and getting better. When I was looking around, you know, looking around at this thing and being interested in. Of course, it's so much easier to find information now. Now it's just about finding good information instead of bad information. But on that, though, do you think that made the group feel closer? Like if you met, you know what I mean? Do you think there was like, did it feel more intense because it was smaller and hidden and all of that sort of thing? Or do you prefer the new freedom way, I guess?
Speaking for myself, I'm not sure that we were necessarily closer back then within our coven. What closeness there was born in part of fear, quite frankly.
Sure.
And my current coven, my family of choice, we are very, very close. We are closer than my blood sisters and brothers, and I think the matter of intimacy and closeness and relationship is a matter of how much people are willing to risk and commit. And I don't think that has anything to do with the era in which you practice the craft.
I was just curious because I have, you know, some people almost sound as if they miss the old days when it was a bit more secret, if you know what I mean. So It's an interesting argument. It's an interesting dynamic. Other people, some I've had on my show that have taught many folks, say, I have to go through 100 students before I find one that really sticks anyway, so what's the use of being secret? You know, so it's just different ways of looking at it. You know.
Yes, it's very individual. Always.
And, of course, it's not that long ago historically, it was actually illegal. You know, it was illegal in the 50s in Britain, you know, back at that time when Gerald Gardner and all those were coming about. It was actually an illegal practice, and I don't know how enforced it was.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. It's changed immensely, and I think mostly for the better. We remember the good old days fondly, but not everything about the good old days was good.
But we want to thank you very much for joining us this evening, Amber.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having this show, and I wish you all the blessings of the goddess and the old gods on your work, and hope you have a wonderful autumn in front of you. Blessings.
Yes, I hope you have a wonderful autumn too, and thank you so much, and I'll be emailing you probably tonight and tomorrow, so we can give you the free gifts and everything, and thank you personally for the interview.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Good
thank
night.
You.
All right. Merry, merry parts.
Merry meet again.